Let's open our Bibles, if you would, please, to the book of Joshua. The book of Joshua. We're still working through this great book. Joshua is the thrill of victory. We've talked about Joshua having some defeats, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. Joshua 7, chapter 7, if you will. And as you're finding that, let me say just a word about the men's conference. Years ago, several men came to me and said, "Pastor, we've got ladies' conference. We do all this work. And how come the men can't have a conference?" And I remember saying, "Because the men don't want a conference." And they said, "No, we want one." And then I found out, really, it's all about food. They don't want a conference. They just eat, eat, eat. And so I said, "All right, well, we'll try it once." And so I think this is our 8th, 9th, 10th year. I don't know what it is. It's been great. It's just a feast. A feast spiritually, and then a feast physically. And we've tried to bring in some of the greatest speakers that can relate to men. And so every year it's, who are we going to have? Who do you think would relate? You know, not just famous people, but guys who can really relate to our men. And so several things I'm going to ask you to do. One, I do want everyone praying. You know, it would just behoove us not just to say we're having 3 meals, 5 sermons, and I hope it works out. We really want to bathe this thing in prayer. And so what are we praying for? We're praying for people who are deciding to come to decide to come. A conference does no one any good if they're not here. And so men in other churches, our own men, people kind of on the fence, maybe newer attendees, as we're working the phones this week and trying to get them to sign up and come and working it all out, we want them to say, "Okay, I'm in. I'm going to come." Second, we want safety for all the churches traveling from out of town to come here. And some of them are going over mountains and all sorts of things just to get here. And then we want the pastors to be encouraged. Last year, I don't know if we had 15, 20, 25 pastors. I don't know how many we had. But we want them to feel like, "Hey, I can stay in the saddle another year." I think of Brother Mont. He'll be driving from a Nevada area. What's the name of that place? Winnemucca, Nevada. And that's a long drive. It's about a 7-hour drive. One of his sons passed away a year and a half ago. His other son was in an explosion this year, badly burnt, 70% of his body burned. Brother Mont was burned in that accident. He's coming to our conference, and he's bringing a group of men. We want him to be encouraged. I think of another man. He said, "This is the greatest conference we go to every year, excluding accountant camp, pastor's conference." He said, "This is the conference that does me good." Brother Miracle over in Santa Rosa just got in the saddle, pastoring his first church. Our missionary, William Miracle, is bringing 20 men. 20 men. I didn't know they had 20 men in that church. So I don't know. Maybe he's recruiting others. I don't know who they are, but 20. And so they're all excited. And you'll see. We're letting them camp out. It's like Daniel Boone, Davy Crockett. We're letting them rough it. They're sleeping in an air-conditioned building. You know, that's almost next to the wilderness, Lewis and Clark. And so some will have a camper trailer here. Some will have an air mattress. Some will be sleeping on the pews. But you'll see them. You'll see them walking around our building just looking. They're looking for ideas. They're going to be looking at our missions board. They're going to be looking just all around, looking at the property. Because this is the big church compared to many of theirs. And so let's just open our hearts to these people. Sometimes it's not the sermon that changes a life. It's a handshake and, "Where you from? Let me hear your story." Sometimes it's just a little interest in them. And so though we're going to enjoy it as men and young men, let's reach out to these people that will be coming in. It could be do or die for some of these. And we just want them to leave saying, "I was encouraged at the men's conference." Please, please, please pray. And there's still a few things that could be done. See Brother Brett Ford, if you'd like to help in the kitchen, clean up, tables, anything like that, that would be a help. And then we still have a few things that need to be done around the property. See me, and I've got a list of those things as well. We're in the book of Joshua here. We're going to jump right in. A little of the background. Joshua has now taken the baton, so to speak, Moses has passed away. Moses led them out of Egypt with God's hand. Now it's Joshua's turn to lead them into the promised land, or Canaan, or Israel. They have crossed over the Jordan River. They have conquered Jericho by faith. 13 laps around that city, it fell down flat. They conquered Jericho. They were defeated in Ai because they did not put everyone in, not total participation. And also there was sin in the camp. Ai had sinned. And once they dealt with that, they went back to Ai and they had the victory. Now we're looking at a different episode here in Joshua chapter. Well, let's just jump over here in chapter 9 instead. Let's get moving. Chapter 9 of Joshua, and let's notice what it says here. And we're just going to highlight some of the verses here. And it says, and it came to pass when all the kings which were on this side Jordan, in the hills and in the valleys and in the coast of the great sea over great Lebanon, and all these places heard thereof, verse 2, that they gathered themselves together to fight with Joshua and with Israel with one accord. When the inhabitants of Gibeon heard that Joshua had done what Joshua had done unto Jericho and to Ai, they did work willingly and went and made as if they had been ambassadors, and took old sacks upon their asses and wine bottles, old and rent and bound up, and old shoes, and clouted upon their feet, and old garments upon them, and all the bread of their provision was dry and moldy. And they went to Joshua unto the camp at Gilgal, and said unto him and to the men of Israel, we be come from a far country. Now therefore make ye a league with us. And the men of Israel said unto the Hivites, peradventure ye dwell among us, and how shall we make a league with you? And they said unto Joshua, we are thy servants. And Joshua said unto them, who are ye, and from whence come ye? And they said unto him, from a very far country. Thy servants are come because of the name of the Lord thy God. We have heard the fame of him, and all that he did in Egypt, and all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites that were beyond Jordan, to Sihon, king of Heshbon, and Og, king of Bashan, which was at Ashtaroth. Wherefore, our elders and all the inhabitants of our country spake to us, saying, take victuals with you for the journey, and go to meet them, and say unto them, we are your servants. Now therefore, now make a league with us. This our bread we took hot from our provision out of our houses on the day we came forth to go unto you. But now, behold, it is dry and it is moldy. And these bottles of wine which were filled were new, and behold, they be rent. And these our garments and our shoes are become old by reason of the very long journey. The men took of their victuals. Here's the key. And asked not counsel at the mouth of the Lord. They had been tricked. These people put on old clothes. They packed old bread that was moldy. And they were really the neighbors of Joshua. They came from Gibeon and they said, we took this long, long journey. Would you please make peace with us? They tricked them. They lied. And it said, and they asked not counsel at the mouth of the Lord. And Joshua made peace with them and made a league with them and let them live. And the princes of the congregation swear unto them. And it came to pass at the end of 3 days. See, it came out. After they had made a league with them, that they heard that they were their neighbors, they were the enemies, and that they dwelt among them. And the children of Israel journeyed and came into their cities on the third day. Now their cities were Gibeon and these other places. Verse 18, and the children of Israel smote them not, because the princes of the congregation had sworn unto them by the Lord God of Israel. And all the congregation murmured against the princes or the leaders. Verse 14, they asked not counsel because of that. Verse 18, now there's murmuring. There's complaining in the camp. Chapter 10, now they're in a battle. Gibeon, that town is now attacked by other Canaanite cities. Chapter 10, verse 4. And they said, come up unto me. They're telling Joshua and his army, come up unto me and help me that we may smite. This is the enemy in verse 4, that we may smite Gibeon, for it hath made peace with Joshua and with the children of Israel. Therefore, the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon, gathered themselves together and went up, they and all their hosts, and encamped before Gibeon and made war against it. And the men of Gibeon sent unto Joshua to the camp of Gilgal, saying, slack not thine hand from thy servants. Come up to us quickly and save us and help us. Verse 7, so Joshua ascended from Gilgal. And that's as far as we'll probably go. So here it is. They asked not counsel. Then there was murmuring in the camp. Then they ended up in a battle they were never supposed to be in. And it all started right here. They asked not counsel. They made a quick decision, and all these things happened to Joshua and his army. I want to speak on this subject tonight, the consequences of no counsel. The consequences of no counsel. Father, bless this brief time we have tonight. Teach us thy word. Give us something that's going to help us in our everyday life. In Jesus' name, amen. There's a courthouse in Ohio. I read this years ago. It's at this certain location that when it rains on the roof of the courthouse, water that goes down one side of the roof ends up in little streams, then tributaries. Eventually, it ends up in one of the Great Lakes. The water that ends up on the other side of the roof of the courthouse ends up in little streams that eventually ends up in the Mississippi River and eventually the Gulf of Mexico. So one puff of wind separates two drops of rain that were close together by thousands of miles apart. One decision can separate someone from the will of God and where God would have someone to be by thousands of spiritual miles. So here's the story. Joshua has had two victories. They have defeated Jericho. They've defeated Ai. They're doing well. Victory's coming. Satan doesn't like that. Now he's figuring, how do we get them off track? So wisely but subtly, one of the cities says, we don't want to be destroyed. We don't want to. And so they lied. And they came in and there was a league that was made. Decisions. Sometimes they look little, but it seems like they're all big. How about this one? Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. And he ends up writing the book of Daniel. He made one decision as a teenager and he stuck with it. I think of Joshua. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. He made a decision for his family and it stuck. I think of Moses, Hebrews 11. Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. He made one choice. He said, I want to be with God's people, rather be whipped with them than party with the wrong crowd. He made a decision. I think of Eve. She decided to take the fruit off the tree. One decision. I think of David. He decided to sit out one battle, just take the day off when he should have been in battle, and then it was the Bathsheba issue. I think a lot. He decided to leave Abraham, part the ways over a business transaction, and of course he lost his family. I think of the prodigal son. He was the boy with a brother, had a great home, but he decided, I'm leaving home. I can't handle the rules. One decision. We know the story. I think of Elimelech during a time of famine. In a time of unemployment, perhaps, in a time of little finances, he made one decision and moved his family to a forbidden city, the city of Moab, that God says, my people are not to dwell there. And he lost his life and his sons and his family. You say, Pastor, how does all this kind of start? We have to realize that our hearts sometimes are deceitful. Jeremiah 17:9, the heart is deceitful and desperately wicked, and who can know it? It was Esau, you remember? He said, man, I'm starving to death. You know, only men say that, I think. You know, I've never heard a woman say, I'm starving to death. No, men are always starving to death. 3 o'clock in the morning, they wake up. They need to go to the refrigerator. You know, they hear a noise. It's danger. So what do they check? They don't check on the wife. They don't check on the kids. They check on the refrigerator. So it's Esau. He's hungry. He's coming home from a long day. And Jacob is making the porridge, the Wendy's chili. And he says, I'm going to die. I want some food. And he sells his birthright because he feels hungry. In the book of James, the Bible says, let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted of evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he's, here it is, drawn away of his own lust. The word lust is a good word, but it means desire. And so sometimes our desires say, here's what I want. And we confuse it with, here's what I need. And it becomes a decision. It was Eve. She wanted the apple or the fruit, whatever it was, because the Bible says it would make her, in her opinion, Satan said, it will make you wise. She wanted to be wise, so she took the fruit. She followed her feelings. Okay, let's just help me out a little bit here. We're going to take this section here, and when I count to three, I just want you to say, follow your feelings. And I know it would be so hard for you to say. We got such good Christians here, and I just want you to say that. And then I'm going to count to three, and I want this section to say, follow the word. All right? And then this section, you choose whichever one you want to say. All right? So we're going to give you a lot of liberty over here. All right? We're going to practice. Here we go. One, two, three. Okay, just this section here. You ready? Here we go. A little bit more enthusiasm. Come on. You ready? Here we go. Okay? Follow the word. You ready? All right? How about over here? It doesn't matter. Hey, all the teenagers said, follow your feeling. No, one of them said, follow your belly. Anyway, so here we are. On three, just kind of yell it out. You ready? Whatever yours is. One, two, three. Now, it's always that way. That's the battle. Follow the word or follow your feelings. Follow the word. I just feel. Hey, why didn't you come to church? I just didn't feel like it. Why'd you cuss that person out? I just felt like it. Why did you do that stupid thing? I just felt like it. And oftentimes we follow our feelings instead of following the word. Greatest decisions in my life, I've been saved 52 years, been married 42 years, started going to church over 57 years ago. What's that mean? I'm 182. That's what that means if you add it all up. Greatest decisions I've ever made. Number one, getting saved. I've never regretted it. I've never met a person who said, I wish I wouldn't have got saved so young. I wish I'd have waited and put it off. I wish I would have. Number two, to go to camp. Didn't want to go to camp. Didn't need camp. But camp changed my life. I made a decision to go to teen camp. Three, I made a decision to walk with the Lord and open this book every day. I didn't always hit a lot of it, but I opened it. I read it. I spent time in prayer. That's a decision. You're going to have to prioritize this book or it won't happen. You're going to have to prioritize your time with the Lord or it's not going to happen. Decision four, gospel music over the worldly music. You know, I don't know if you know this, but when I was a teenager, there was ungodly music. Elvis was just coming out. The Beatles had just debuted on Ed Sullivan's show. And then all the famous gospel singers, Herman's Hermits, the Monkees, the Beach Boys. I mean, you name, I mean, they all started coming out. And I realized my flesh liked that. My foot liked it. My flesh liked it. My ears liked it. My heart liked it. I loved that music. I remember I was speaking at a teen camp years ago, and we had a little question and answer. That's what they wanted to do. Here's what the teens asked. You know, all these spiritual questions. What's your favorite food? What kind of car do you drive? Then they asked, what's your favorite music? I said, rock music. They said, hang on here. And it kind of took them back. They said, do what? I said, my favorite music is rock music. I love it. Well, wait a minute. You preached that we shouldn't listen to it. I said, I didn't say I listened to it. I'm just telling you. That's my favorite music. My flesh loves it. It loves it. Some music makes people violent. Some music makes people sensual. Some music makes people depressed, country and western. Some music makes people angry, rap music. I'm not going to call it by name. But all these musics affect our emotion. And it was a great day and a great decision when I said, no more listening to the wrong kind of music. It's going to be gospel music that pleases the Lord. It's not just going to be what feels good. It's going to be what is good. And eventually, I'll feel good. And folks, you can't wean off of it. Just, this is a side note here. You can't go from crack cocaine and say, I'll just be on heroin the rest of my life and, you know, just settle for that. No, you're going to have to get off all of it if you're going to have victory. You're going to have to get off all that worldly music. Anytime someone's struggling with rebellion, always check what kind of music they're listening to. What are they dwelling on? What are they meditating on? It'll never help you spiritually. We're not trying to take away, quote, good music. But you'll always hear this. Don't mess with my clothes. Don't tell me how to raise my kids. And don't mess with my music. By the way, when you got saved, your body's the temple of the Holy Ghost who dwells in you. You're not your own. Your ears are not your own. Your eardrums are not your own. Your heart is not your own. God cares what you put into it. You want victory? Plug in the church CDs. Plug in the gospel music. It'll help your spirit. When you're going through a tragedy and a heartache, the world's music will not comfort you. It will not help you. Anyway, that's a side note, but that's a decision I made. You don't have to make it tonight. Number five, to be soul conscious. To be soul conscious, carry gospel tracts, witness, tell people how to get saved. Then the next greatest decision I ever made was which college I would attend. You know, sometimes we have great kids in our youth group. They love the Lord. They're doing great. And then they choose a college that's leaning worldly instead of leaning godly. One that's not conservative. And then they go, one that's not the straight and narrow. And pretty soon, those type colleges attract those type people. You go to a compromiser college, soon it's compromising people, and soon that affects you. And then the professors, and they're not soul winners, and so forth. I picked a great college. Great decision. I got to work for Brother Buchanan for 7 years. Brother Buchanan helped me. He was patient with me. He didn't squeeze me out like a sponge. I still remember he'd come into my office and he'd say, hey, what are you doing here? Because I was the workaholic. You know, I thought the week started at 80 hours. Go home. You're married. Your wife needs you. I said, what? Go get out of here. I needed that. It was a wise decision. Then the other great decision I made, besides being married and besides, you know, obviously my wife, was to move to Napa. And then I'd say last, to never quit serving God. You know, that's a decision. Because when the valleys come and the dark days come, you can't be, do I want to stay in this thing or not? Am I in all the way or not? Am I turning back? And I love that song. And shall I turn back into this world? No, no, not I, not I. And shall I? Hey, you're going to have to make up your mind. Man, we're here. We're here till the last totem pole falls down. It's hook, line, sinker. Hook, line, sinker. Lock, stock, barrel. I mean, it's all in. Want to just share this, and I'll get to some scriptures in a moment. Let me share with you the dumbest, worst decisions I've ever seen anybody make. And it didn't take me long to come up with this list. People I've known through the years who ran off and left their family for somebody else. That woman that birthed their children. That woman that went through thick and thin for them. Those kids. And then for a mom or a dad to meet someone on the internet and in 2 weeks flush everything down the drain, their Christian testimony, their name, their influence, their kids, their mate, to run off with someone else. One day they're going to wake up, look in the mirror, and have to face themselves and say, what have I done? That's one of the worst decisions I've seen anybody make, and I've seen them make it. Number two, when a kid at Bible college, his grandmother got sick. He called, he said, I got to come home. My grandma's sick. She's going to die. I said, don't come home. It's a trick. Said, you'll never go back. No, she's dying. I got to come home. I said, how sick is she? Well, the family said she's dying. I got to come home. That's been 40 years ago. She's still dying. I never did hear if that woman ever passed away. But it was long enough for that student to get home from Bible college, fall in love with someone else, marry the wrong person. It never did last. He was a preacher boy, going to do great things for God. But he left because one person was sick. I begged him not to. I said, don't leave. Let's get all the facts. Maybe you can visit. Let's call her. Let's find out. No, I got to pack up. Man, I got to leave. He never went back. I think of a Bible college student not far from here. Not going to name the college. It's in Santa Clara. He went to college in love with one of the girls in the youth group. He's going to marry her. They're there 2 weeks. She dumps him. He said, I'm going to kill myself. They were in such love. I mean, with such mature love. 2 weeks. No counsel. No asking what anyone thought about it. Just flipped head over heels. Together all the time. Go to class together, together. The shadow. I'm going to kill myself. Dropped out of college. Dropped out of church. That's a pretty bad decision. What, a guy in our church fell in love and married in 2 weeks. Well, excuse me, I'm using the word love loosely. Fell in lust. Maybe she's rich, I don't know. But 2 weeks, met, 2 weeks later, dun, 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 dun. I do. She stuck the ring in his nose. And she wouldn't let him come back to our church because she didn't like me. You got the mate. You got the wife. Congratulations. Sorry you can't serve God. 2 weeks. What a dumb decision. What a family move to another state, left California for $1 an hour. Pastor, we're moving. So what's going on? If I move to this state, I'll make $1 more an hour. I said, this is a joke, right? You're leaving everybody you know. You're leaving church. You're leaving your ministry. You're leaving all these friends you have for a dollar per hour. That week I got a phone call and a stranger was on the phone and they said, excuse me, it's kind of an odd request. Do you know so-and-so? And they called his name. I said, are they okay? He said, I don't even know this person. I said, what's going on? They said, I was driving down the highway in such and such state, and there was a Bible on the side of the road. And it said, if found, return this to, and I had their phone number. We're just trying to get them their Bible. Their Bible blew out of their car on the trip. Kind of a symbolic thing, wasn't it? As they were leaving, God flew out the window on the way. A dollar an hour. There was a family just getting in church. All the relatives were being saved. They loved it here. And a relative died that owned a house in Corning. They owned a house. And they said, you can have the house. They came to me and told me, they said, man, we got a, hey, they're giving us a house in Corning. I said, that's good. You can sell it. Do what? Say, good, you can sell it. Houses sell. Well, Pastor, the house is in Corning. I said, and you're here, and I'm here. But we got to move up there. I said, where's that in the Bible? You can sell the house. They moved up to Corning. month later, you know, we just couldn't find a church like Hopewell. What church are you going to? We're not going at all. Pretty soon the wife fell back into drugs. The kids fell back into drugs. No one in church. For a house. I can see when they get to heaven. What'd you do for me? We got a free house. We got a mansion up here. Dumb decisions I've seen people make. Someone's child got sick. They would be hospitalized. They would have a future surgery. So the entire family stopped going to church altogether. We're serving the Lord. Now our child's sick. We can't come to church. We can't serve anymore. One of the parents died in recent years. At the funeral, one of their children, I don't know why they felt like they needed to say it, they stood up at the funeral and addressed the whole crowd and said, "I'm agnostic. I do not even believe the Bible's true." Their child felt like they needed to broadcast that at their parents' funeral. That child was in our church at one time. Pastor, what's some of the dumbest decisions you've seen people make? I've seen sometimes Bible college students get what I call senioritis. It is a disease. You can't be a junior because that's junioritis. Senioritis. Their friends, it seems like, they're all getting married. So it's, I'm being left behind. They're making a movie about them. Left behind. They're making this book about them, Left Behind. Well, everyone's getting married. My friends are getting married. They're having bridal showers. And they're having babies. And I'm just left behind. Who's left? And they get senioritis. You got to be careful of that. God's got all of our phone numbers. He knows where we live. He knows who the best person would be for you. I'll say this quickly. When a man in our church came into a lot of money, that's always scary. He was working under a house, construction. The house was jacked up. The jacks broke. The house fell on him. He was squatting down. The house pushed him into 18 inches. Broke his pelvis, broke his back, broke his legs. They cut a hole in the floor and airlifted him to the hospital. Months and months surgery, recovery. Everyone cheered when he came back to church in the wheelchair. He won the settlement, about $3 million. All excited. Pastor, I'm buying a bus for the church. Pastor, I'm going to pay this off. Pastor, God's good. Well, he bought a business. And he couldn't keep the pace. So soon he was working 7 days a week. He wasn't in church anymore. I'll be back. Famous words. I'll be back. Soon his wife was sitting in church alone. Soon the child in the Christian school was removed from the school. To keep the seven-day-a-week pace, soon he had to start self-medicating. Soon he was not sleeping at the house. Corvette, yacht, houses, toys, brand-new Harley Davidson, all the toys. And no time to enjoy them. Died of an accidental drug overdose. It started with money. Too busy to come to church now, Pastor. I got a lot going on. Got this business. You know, got to make money. Got to pay the bills. With someone in our church years ago, and somehow they thought, If I see a sign from the Lord, I'm supposed to move. A deer ran through their backyard. They packed up and moved. If I'd have seen it, I'd have shot the deer. And that would have meant you're supposed to stay. You're supposed to eat. I don't know. Fast romances, fast purchases, quick decisions. Give you another one. There are two sons in our youth group. My wife taught one of them. It was in Louisiana. Taught one of the boys, one of the sons, two sons. The one son had just started coming to the teen group and had written me a note. I think God's calling me to preach. In the deep south, some of you know this if you ever live there, the war is still on in some of their heads. The racial war is still on. And most of the churches, they're very, very segregated. I mean, you got white churches, you got black churches, and you didn't see a lot of mixture there. California is a lot different. We were having an honor the athlete day at our church. And I told the church, I said, we're trying to reach these unsaved athletes in the city. We're sending out letters. We're going to have dozens and dozens of visitors. Pray for them. Not every athlete is my color. Pray. We're trying to reach these kids. Well, there were all kind of colors of athletes there that day. And the Sunday school teacher man with the two sons in our church, he looked and he said, I'm not coming to a church like this. I guess he wasn't filled with the Spirit, huh? He sure didn't have love, joy, peace, gentleness, all that kind of stuff. He grabbed his boys out of Sunday school, put them in the car in anger, peeled out in the parking lot, showing how spiritually it was, and said, we'll never be back. I was 10 or 15 years older than his sons. Both of them are already up in heaven, both the boys. He made a major decision when he was angry. Be careful. It affects you. It affects everybody. Hadn't really got to the message. Sometimes it's not the decisions we make, it's how we arrived at them. Here's words I never like hearing. You ready? It's scary, scary words. Parents, get your fingers ready to stick in your kids' ears. You ready? Pastor, I've been thinking. I got all these smart aleck thoughts. It never hurts to do something new. Pastor, I've been thinking. Oh, no. I know there's going to be something stupid come out of their mouth just right after that statement. Here's another one. God wants me to be happy. Is that biblical? Ask Job. Be happy. Be happy. You know that little fish that moves around? You remember that? Tell Jesus on the cross, be happy. That is not always God's plan. And then I hear this one sometimes. I sought counsel, and here's what I've decided to do. Sometimes I hear that. What does the Bible say about counsel? Joshua and the leaders sought not counsel at the mouth of the Lord. What does that mean? What does that mean to us? Jeroboam, Solomon's dying. Jeroboam becomes the new king. The wise men said, let up on the taxes. By the way, President Biden, let up on the taxes. Governor Newsom, let up on the taxes. Anyway, they're not listening to this tonight. I doubt they're on our broadcast, but They said, the people will follow you if you'll serve them. Don't be so mean. Let up on the taxes. Rehoboam listened. Then he went to his peers, people he grew up with in junior high. In high school, he says, what do you think ought to do? The experienced people with wisdom said, let up. They said, crank it down, up the taxes. It split the nation of Israel. They tried to kill him. There was a coup. It's important counsel that we get. I want to say this to the young people. Stay off the social media counsel. Get off the TikTok and the dares and all those people that could care less about you, that bully and gang up on you and tell you you ought to commit suicide. All these dares and dangerous things they tell you to do. I still remember having that image in my mind when President Bush, and I always get them mixed up, which one was the second one? H? George H? George W, the second one. I remember when he was getting ready to declare war on some nations, and he knew there would be a lot of deaths, it'd be a lot of criticism. He called Billy Graham to come to the White House. And I remember on the news that night, they just showed, they said, and tonight we believe it's the eve of America going to war. President Bush has asked Billy Graham to fly in. There they are right there. And they showed a video. They were walking around the White House property talking. He's the one, Billy Graham's the one that led him to Christ. It's in his book. He was thinking, I'm the president of the United States. I can make a phone call and there are bombs going off and lots of people will be killed and war is starting. Guess what he did? He said, I'm not smart enough to make this decision by myself. He asked for someone wise to come in and talk to him. Pastor, what are you trying to get at here? Let me read you some verses quickly here. These are found in Proverbs. Here's what Scripture says about counsel. Where there is no counsel, where no counsel is, the people fall. So notice the warning there. No counsel, you're going down. But in a multitude of counselors, there's safety. And multitude doesn't mean, well, 8 out of 10 said I should do that. No, it's talking about a variety of counselors. Here's one. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise. Someone that listens to counsel is a wise person. Here's one. Without counsel, purposes are disappointed. Oh, I've got so many disappointments. Oh, I'm so disappointed in how all this turned out. Not seeking counsel makes us a disappointed person. There are many devices in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the counsel of the Lord, that shall stand. Counsel is like, in the heart of a man, is like deep water. But a man of understanding will draw it out. What's that mean? Wise people are like a well. You put in the bucket with questions. You're pulling out their wisdom. You're asking their opinion. How do you see this? What are your thoughts on this? If I do this, how do you think it's going to turn out? Other people, how do they do it? You have Bible verses. Do you have something in Proverbs you can share with me? Help me with this. That's what he's saying. For by wise counsel thou shalt make thy war. You're going into a battle. You're going into an issue, a financial issue, a lawsuit, maybe a marriage issue, a wayward child, an addiction. You have a battle you're facing. God says you do well if you have counsel. Now I want to say this, and we're kind of wrapping things up. How not to seek counsel. Do not ask people who will affirm what you've already decided to do. Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to run off with Gertrude. Don't you think that's a wise thing to do? Yep, I think that's what you ought to do. A man's got to be happy. You're not happy who you're with. Run off with Gertrude. Yeah, that's a good idea. You know, some people do that. They find all these people who are going to agree with what they've already decided. And then they just take a consensus, and it's this. Well, I sought counsel, and all these people told me I ought to do that. Yeah, who'd you seek counsel from? My second grade son. My junior high friend. The kid that smokes dope across the street. Someone that used to go to church that hadn't been to church since we put in the green carpet. Sometimes we're asking the wrong people. That's what I'm trying to say. How not to seek counsel? Asking for counsel, but withholding pertinent information. If you really want advice and wisdom from people, you have to give all the facts and lay it all out there. You can't withhold some stuff because then you're being deceitful. Now they're giving you advice. You haven't told them the whole story. I really am in love with so-and-so. What do you think? What do you think? Well, man, looks like a good person. What do you think? Man, looks good to me. But you didn't tell them they're hooked on drugs. And you forgot to tell them their divorce hadn't gone through. And you forgot to tell them they got five kids out of wedlock. Hey, give them the whole story. Every Christian needs what we call a Christian cabinet. You say, Pastor, I got a Christian refrigerator, got a Christian washing machine, but I don't have a Christian cabinet. No, it means a board of advisors that you consult when you're making what we call a big decision. What's a big decision? A major purchase. For some of you, that'd be anything over $1,000. That's a big decision. What college? Who to date? Vocation. Pastor, I've always wanted to open my own drug dispensary. I just think marijuana is a beautiful leaf. I just love how it looks. You may want to get some counsel on that. Who ought to be on your Christian cabinet? I want to give you just some names of people real quick. Parents. You say, well, what if they're not saved? Has nothing to do with it. They know you. Now, sometimes they're not going to be informed. Okay, for instance, years ago, I was in a Bible college, Arlington, fellas. Okay, Arlington Baptist College. The college was a great college at one time. I went during the declining years. They had no curfew in the dorms. Sometimes the guys ended up in the girls' dorms. Very little supervision. Blaring rock music in the Christian college, blaring out of the dorms. I felt like I was trying to hold up the whole college. I wanted to get out of there. I told my dad. I said, Dad, this college is going down. He said, Son, you started something. You need to finish something. I said, But Dad, you don't understand. And I gave him all the scenarios. See, he knew me. Parents, if your parents are alive, you want to ask, what's your opinion? Tell me what you think. You know me. Would I survive here? Is this a good person to date? Is this a good vocation? Look, if you're struggling at passing school, just the normal subjects, you may not want to train to be a rocket scientist. And your parents may help you with that. Parents, second, pastor. And if you read in Hebrews 13, verse 7 and 17, it says, He watches for your soul. Not He's a dictator saying, you must do this, you know, you have to buy a Volkswagen, you have to buy a Buick, you have, no. But it's cause and effect. He's called an elder in the Bible. That means he's experienced. He's been around a lot of people. He has seen cause and effect. He has seen how decisions turn out and how they don't turn out. At least he can say, here's what I've seen. It's just a wise thing to bounce some ideas and major decisions off of someone who's been saved longer, a little bit further down the road, seen more than you have. Next, a prophet. By that, I'm just saying wisely, someone who's a godly Christian who will tell you how it is. Not someone who's just going to agree with you, but someone who says, here's what I think, like it or lump it. That's what you need. And then I'll throw this out, an expert in that field. I have sought counsel from some of you. From time to time, maybe we're going to make a purchase. I'm going to buy a car, need something fixed in the house. I'm thinking about something with my kids. Now we got grandkids. And I've sought counsel. I've said, how did you do this? What is your advice? Do you have some input on this? How would you handle this? I've asked you. When my wife was in the hospital, I called Jim Blaylock, my roommate in Bible college, who pastors in Beacon Baptist in Jupiter, Florida. I said, Jim, your wife passed away of cancer 2 years ago. You're a pastor. Give me some advice right now. First thing he asked, is she going to live or die? I said, I don't know. He said, here's several things I tell you right now at this point. I had to call someone who had been through it. I sought counsel. You know what he told me? Don't miss Sundays. Your people need to see you on Sunday. They need some stability, and you need to see them. You need to be around them. Don't miss Sunday. Miss Wednesday. Have someone else speak, but you got to be there Sundays. Okay, I got it. What else? So I'll just share a quick personal testimony. How did I decide to come here? When I was in Louisiana, my salary was three times the salary that was here. We owned a house. Get this, $22,000 was the purchase of a house. $22,000 in Louisiana. Came with the roaches. They threw the roaches in. And the humidity came with it. In the little meeting we had when I candidated here to see if I wanted to come and see if they wanted me to come, someone says, why would you come here? I felt like saying, it's something you know nothing of. It's called the will of God. So how did I decide to come here? Several things. One, I put my heart in neutral. I said, Lord, I know I'm supposed to pastor. That is settled. I know I'm supposed to pastor. I thought I'd work with teenagers the rest of my life just as on staff there. But it was in neutral. Lord, mission field. North, south, east, west. Here I am. You've got my attention. Here I am. I was in neutral. Often kid and say, Lord, send me anywhere in the deep south. Only go with me in Texas, Mississippi, Alabama. Lord. I said, Lord, here I am. Second, I asked my pastor. I came into Brother Buchanan's office. He didn't counsel much, but he knew people. I said, all right, Brother Buchanan, I got my notebook here. Guide my life. I said, I want to be here the rest of my life, helping you. But here's what my devotions are giving me. Here's what God's saying. Here's these scriptures. Here's these desires. You tell me, am I supposed to pastor? I said, you're going to have to throw me out of this state. I am not going to mess up the lives of my wife or our kids. My decision is like dominoes. It's going to affect them. Am I supposed to pastor? If you tell me no, I'll happily work here the rest of my life. And God's going to have to speak to me through you. We talked for 2 hours. He said, well, it's killing me. He said, you're supposed to pastor. He said, you want me to pick up a telephone and get you a church? He said, I know all kind of churches wanting a pastor. I said, no! I want God to find me. I want it to be the Lord. I step off the bus. We took our teams to Monterrey, Mexico, to the mission field. I stepped off the bus in the parking lot. My wife hugged me and kissed me, and she said, "You got a phone call from someplace called Napa? I said, "Okay, where's that?" "California." My heart sunk. No. See, the rest of the country thinks we have daily earthquakes, everyone's dying of AIDS, everyone has pink hair, mohawks, surfboards, valley girls. We're kind of stigmatized here. I said, "California." My heart was in neutral. Green light from the pastor. I sat down and asked my dad. Mom was crying. My mother told me, she's 92, she said, "The saddest day in my life was when we dropped off Verna and the two girls at the airport to fly to meet you in California." She said, "Your dad and I cried all the way home. We are the only grandkids." But I had a promise in the Bible. "Whosoever leaveth mother or father or houses or lands for my sake, I will restore you 100-fold. I've got brothers and sisters by the hundreds in this state. I've got women in our church older than me I've looked up to as mothers, and older men as fathers. I didn't lose anything when we left. We gained something." I asked my dad, "Dad, what do you think?" He said, "Son, it's going to kill us. But I believe you're supposed to go." I had a godly friend who was a prophet. His name is Jerry Pertell. He's the wild man from Borneo. "California, never! Those people are nuts!" I shared everything. He said, "How'd they find you?" Get this. A missionary happened to be passing through Napa. He had some of my book. My first book I ever wrote was called Christian Dating. I wrote it when I was, I think, 25. He had some. He was selling them. The pastor ended up with the book. Said, "We'll call this guy." I didn't arrange that. You know, there was maybe a few things at stake, huh, with that one decision. Who my kids would meet. Maybe who they would marry. What college they would go to. Who they would lead to Christ. Any influence that my wife and I have had on this state or on you. It was kind of all in the balance. One decision. It was too big a decision for me to make. I had to get some help. I wanted to go with all green lights. So what did I do? We flew out here and spoke. I didn't try to open the door. Brother Steve was on the pulpit committee. He called and he said, "You know, we'd like you to come out and speak and this and that." I spoke. I didn't call all the men. "Hey, vote for me. Vote for the pastor. You know, I'd really like to." In my heart, I knew we were moving. On the plane, I told my wife, I said, "We're moving." She goes, they hadn't even voted. I said, "I'm close enough to the Lord. I know when he speaks, I know we're coming here." The church voted. We got a majority of the vote, but the previous pastor felt like the percentage ought to be higher. So he called. He says, "You know, you got the vote, but I think it ought to be higher, so we're not calling you." I said, "That's so odd," in my heart. Said, "I knew we were supposed to move there." Church from Lake Charles, Louisiana called. They said, "Our church building is paid for." Now, this is 35 years ago. The salary, Louisiana money, $800 a week. Our house payment was $200. Four times the house payment, salary a week. And there's $50,000 in surplus in the church account. Would you like to candidate? I said, "Maybe I can pastor both churches." No, and I didn't say that. I knew we were supposed to come here. 6 weeks later, Brother Steve called me on the phone. He goes, well, we revoted. If you want to come, you're welcome to come. I knew we were supposed to. We signed papers at the airport on our house. I said, Lord, you got to sell that house we live in. Someone chased us to the airport to sign the papers. Amen. What did I do for that week or several weeks? I fasted, not the whole time, but I went without food and asked God to direct me. Read the whole book of Proverbs at one sitting. And I waited. It was no rush decision. We waited. We waited. They ask not counsel at the mouth of the Lord. Because they didn't ask counsel, he didn't give them any. Because of that, the people started murmuring about that decision. There was no peace. Because of that, they had to fight some battles they never had to really fight. Let me ask you a question. Is there some counsel you need to be seeking from him? His name is Wonderful Counselor. Thy statutes are my counselors. Is there maybe some counsel about some decision, some step you're getting ready to take? Don't be disappointed. Don't be disappointed. And by the way, I don't need a lot of business. I don't need a line of people. Hey, 500 people need to talk to you this week. But some in this room probably need to sit down with someone this week and say, okay, here's my life. Here's what I'm thinking of. What would you do? You don't have to take it. You don't have to do what anybody says. You're independent. You're your own man, your own woman. But you'd be wise if you live your life with counsel. You wonder why I'm still serving the Lord after all these years? During major times or transitions, I ask questions and I sought counsel. And you'd be well to do that as well. I know we've been a little bit long, but 4 years ago, I preached a real short message. So we're kind of making up for it tonight, okay?